This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we speak with a man who came to Port Townsend to talk about his attempt to make history. He believes he is about to become the first Republican governor in Washington since before the internet was invented. And now, we go inside the Compass. Pop quiz. When was the last time the state of Washington had a Republican governor? If you can't recall, you are not alone. Many voters who will cast ballots in a race for governor this November weren't even born the last time a Republican governor was elected here. The year was 1980. To put that in perspective, the last time Washington elected a Republican governor, cell phones, digital cameras, and DVDs didn't even exist. There were no personal computers and no internet. This fall, Republican businessman Bill Bryant intends to write a bit of history by defeating the incumbent governor, Democrat Jay Inslee. Bryant says he sees a clear path to victory, in no small part because many of his policies are supported by liberals and conservatives alike. Last week, Bryant came to the Elks Lodge in Port Townsend to address a group of GOP supporters, and shortly before the program began, he sat down with KPTZ News to discuss his chances of winning, his childhood connection to Port Townsend, and the wacky state of American politics today. We started with
the presidential situation, the race, the oddness of it. I'm going to try and frame a couple of basic questions, although there's so many places we can go. But one that occurs to me right now is there's an awful lot of people in the GOP nationally and in various local areas that will not or have said they will not support Donald Trump as the nominee. Where do you stand on that?
I want to run a governor's race. And it seems like increasingly the press just wants to talk about Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump's not running for governor. So why do we keep talking about Mr. Trump? Let's talk about why 25% of our ninth graders aren't graduating from high school. Let's talk about why we're spending millions and millions of dollars on Puget Sound, but we're not really improving it. Let's talk about the fact that we've got broken bureaucracies at the Department of Corrections, Western State Hospital, the Department of Transportation. Let's focus on those issues that really affect our day-to-day life. I'm not trying to dodge the question. I'm just saying, look, there's something going on besides Mr. Trump. I'm running for governor. I'm going to talk about the issues that affect people in Washington State. Let everybody else decide in this crazy circus of a presidential year who they want to vote for. I'm going to be focused on Washington State issues.
So although Donald Trump may not be really relevant to the Washington State gubernatorial race, there are some parallels in that you have an established, assuming Hillary Clinton is the nominee, an established career politician for the most part, a businessman, and we have the same thing here in Washington State, Jay Inslee and Bill Bryant. So how do you see that on a national level with a businessman vs.?
I would say that if you have to pick probably among the many ways that we're different, I would like to think of myself as much more inclusive and that I am really focused on bringing people together behind solutions and getting stuff done. And I would hope whoever's elected president, whether it's Secretary Clinton or Mr. Trump or whoever else, because in this year I don't think it's over till it's over, I hope they are someone who can pull people together and help this country heal, because it is more divided than I have ever seen it in my lifetime.
And I agree with that. Do you have any thoughts on why that is, how that's happened?
I think the rhetoric on both sides in this presidential race have alienated a lot of people. But going into the race, on both sides, I think there are people all across our state and our nation who feel that the political establishment on the left and the right have used them and forgotten about them. I was in Pierce County at the beginning of this campaign, so almost a year ago, and after I gave my speech, I was walking out the door, and there was a gentleman sitting in a folding chair by the door, and as I walked by, he said, "Son, can I ask you a question?" And I said, "Sure." He was probably in his mid-70s, I'm guessing. And I sat down. He said, when you guys are making decisions, and by you guys he meant elected officials, he said, when you guys are making decisions, do you ever think about people like me? He had raised his kids. He'd worked hard his whole life. He owned a house. He was on a fixed income. He said, I'm not asking for a handout. He said, I just want to know, do you even think about people like us? There's a whole lot of people who feel forgotten. I mean, I choked up. I looked and saw my dad and grandpa in his eyes. Whoever is elected president needs to reach out and include those who really feel that even though they're in our midst, they've been left behind. And I think Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump in different ways are giving voice to those people.
Washington hasn't had a Republican governor in 35 years. It's the longest gubernatorial losing streak in the entire nation. What has to happen for you to break that losing streak?
People have to vote.
Just that simple?
It is. It's really math. Dino Rossi statistically tied, but had Benton County over in the Tri-Cities voted in the same percentage as King County, Dino Rossi would have been elected governor well out of recount territory.
Hmm.
If folks in Clark, Tri-Cities, Spokane, Yakima counties had voted in the same percentage as King County, I'm not sure that Rob McKenna would have won, but it would have been a lot closer. We need to make sure that everybody all around the state, on the Olympic Peninsula, in the Yakima Valley, and in Spokane, are voting.
Why do you suppose they haven't been voting? And when you say people have to vote, are you referring specifically to Republicans?
Yeah, there are a lot of Republicans who have not voted in the past because they didn't think their vote was going to matter anyway. We've identified about 107,000 people around the state who we believe would have voted for Rob McKenna, but who didn't turn in a ballot. 107,000. Rob lost by 94,000 votes.
Hmm.
So we just need to make sure that everyone all across the state turns out and votes in the primary in July, August, and then general this fall.
And how are you going to make that happen?
We've divided the state down into the 49 legislative districts as opposed to counties, and we've identified exactly how many people we need to have vote for me in each of those legislative districts. And we are now reaching out specifically to the people who make up that group. For example, in downtown Vancouver, Rob McKenna received 44% of the vote. For me to get 51% of the vote statewide, I need to get 47% of downtown Vancouver. I don't need to win, I just need to get 47%. The difference between Rob's 44 and my 47% is 1,300 votes. We've identified 5,000 people who probably would have voted for Rob but didn't turn in a ballot. So we'll be working with those 5,000 people to make sure at least 1,300 of them vote. And if they do, and people do in each of the legislative districts around the state, we'll have 51% come election day.
Now, you actually worked for the last Republican governor in Washington.
I did. I was the executive director or staff director, whatever it was called, of the Governor's Council on International Trade. And it was a group of private sector advisors who helped the governor formulate policies on education and transportation as they affected our international trade economy.
And that governor was?
Governor Spelman.
And how did you come to get that job?
I was going to Georgetown. Governor Spelman was a graduate of Georgetown, and he was appointing to head up this council a friend of mine, or my family's, who had also been a Georgetown graduate. And he said, listen, Bill, I'm going to be appointed by the governor to run this. It was a voluntary position for him, but I'm going to need someone who can actually run it on a day-to-day basis. And so he asked me when I graduated to come on and join him and help the governor coordinate international trade policy.
Now, there seems to be a widespread perception that the nation's two major parties are more polarized than ever. And you say you want to transcend that, that your agenda isn't necessarily Republican or Democrat, but focused more on what's good for Washington and its citizens. How do you overcome the distrust and sometimes even outright personal hatred that liberals and conservatives sometimes throw at each other?
Well, if you talk to people who are committed to the two parties, there is probably more divide than we've had in decades. But I'll tell you, as I move around the state, most people are disgusted with both the Republican and the Democratic Party. They don't think either party represents them. And so I'm talking to those folks. I'm talking about how we need to have an education system that meets the needs of all kids, regardless of where they grow up. I'm talking about how we can restore salmon, steelhead, and orca populations, how we can generate jobs in communities, not just in King County, but all across Washington State. And I'll tell you, those are not partisan issues. That's just about making government work better. And that's what people want. They don't really care about whether it's a Republican or Democrat. They just want someone who will go in there, quit playing political games, and start getting some stuff done.
The incumbent, Jay Inslee, is a career politician. Now, as a businessman, why do you think you're more qualified for the governor's job than he is?
Because I've run something. I have executive experience. I'm focused on fixing problems, not on playing political games. And I have built a company and helped negotiate agreements that will enable us to export our products all around the world by building coalitions, by bringing diverse groups of people together. And that's what a governor needs to do. If you're a congressman or a career politician, you haven't had that experience. A governor really needs to know how to hire good people, give them the resources they need, and hold them accountable to achieving specific objectives. That also requires a governor who has a vision. Jay Inslee has no vision for this state. He has no strategic plan, and he has demonstrated an inability to articulate where he wants departments to be and then hold people accountable. You get that by being an executive. You get that by running something. You don't get that by being a congressman.
Now, here's a sentence from your own website. Quote, Inslee's lack of executive leadership or disinterest in matters unrelated to climate change is creating broken bureaucracies. Would you care to expand on that?
Sure. He's really not focused on issues unless it's related to climate change. And if you're a governor and you have no strategic plan for where you want your agencies and departments to be in 10 years, and you essentially turn over the running of the government to the department heads and the regulators, you get broken bureaucracies. A broken bureaucracy is a Department of Transportation that creates traffic jams. It's a Department of Corrections that lets prisoners out early. It's a healthcare authority that makes a $470 million cost calculation error. It's a state hospital that fails four federal audits and has prisoners escape. If you're not minding the show, things will begin to break. And in this administration, Olympia and our state government is breaking.
Although you're a Republican, some of your hot-button issues, as you mentioned before, would probably resonate with Democrats, like protection for salmon and wildlife, and your concern for the health of Puget Sound. Tell us what you would like to accomplish in those particular areas.
Sure. Ensuring Puget Sound is healthier when I die than it was when I was born is on my bucket list. And when I was elected King County-wide to the King County Seattle Port Commission, I made it one of my objectives to ensure that the Port of Seattle, the largest landowner on Elliott Bay, was more active in Puget Sound recovery efforts. And so we've actually increased the salmon habitat that is controlled by the Port of Seattle, in some cases in cooperation with the Muckleshoot tribe. We have ensured that the 60 acres of parks along Puget Sound that the port is responsible for are now managed to salmon-safe standards. All of our marinas are now run in a way that allows them to earn 5 Enviro stars, which is a very difficult third-party certification standard to achieve. So at the Port of Seattle, we've been very conscious about how we can help Puget Sound recover. I was also appointed to the Puget Sound Partnership Ecosystems Board. And there I saw how a bureaucracy is really becoming more focused on generating reports than it is getting projects done in the field. And if we're going to turn Puget Sound around, we have got to focus on critical habitat projects that will really make a difference, and not on a little projects that might grab a headline but don't really move the needle forward.
Here in Jefferson County, the Chimicum School Bond proposition has failed 3 times. The facility's there, and I've been there. They're in bad shape. But the bond issue would have cost each individual homeowner thousands, or in many cases, tens of thousands of dollars over the 20-year life of the bond. Now, when we hear that state legislators have been found guilty of failing to adequately fund public schools and were even fined by the state Supreme Court, many wonder if taxpayers are bearing extra weight because of poor or even, in some cases, illegal governance. How do you assess that situation?
Well, the McCleary family is from Chimicum. Yeah, I think the McCleary decision, I think the McClearys are from Chimicum.
You know what? You're right.
Chimicum School District, I think.
You're right.
The heart of the McCleary decision was about equity, which is very important to me because I grew up in the Hood Canal School District and went to school on the Skokomish Reservation. But it was a time when we funded basic education evenly across the state. And so I got a good public education here on the peninsula. That's not entirely true today. Today, because we've become so reliant on local property tax levies, the quality of education a kid gets too often depends upon their school district or their zip code. And the state Supreme Court was saying that is wrong, that the state has an obligation to amply fund education for every pupil in Washington state. And I think the court is right. I think the court overstepped its bounds in its second McCleary decision when it relegated the issue of equity to a footnote and began telling the legislature exactly how many people needed to be hired and what kind of salaries needed to be provided and began writing a budget. It's not the responsibility of the court to write a budget. It's the responsibility of the court to determine whether or not the laws passed by the legislature are constitutional, not to tell the legislature which laws to pass. But we still need to deal with it. It will be my top priority to fully and equitably fund education. It is the primary reason I'm running for governor. And somebody once said, a reporter once said, well, Bill, I've heard this for 30 years that everybody's going to go be the education governor, and what's going to make you any different, because they've never done it. I said, what's going to make me different is I'm willing to jeopardize my second term. If I go to Olympia and can make two or three decisions that will really ensure that every kid in Washington State, whether they go to a really rural school district or an economically disadvantaged school district, every kid has an equal chance to get ahead. And if by doing that I tick off people, I don't get reelected, then I'll go back to my company and go back to work, knowing I've done one or two important things that have helped kids all across Washington State.
Is it just funding?
There are funding needs in some districts, not in others, and that's the equity issue. But it's also a need to reform the system. We live in a state where, depending on where you are, a little bit higher, a little bit lower, but generally 25% of our ninth graders will not graduate from high school. And we accept that. I don't know how many of your listeners would buy a ticket on an airline where they know 25% of the planes crash, but we will and do every year put our kids into a system that we know will fail 25% of them. So it's not just a function of money, it's a function of reform. Too many of the kids that we're losing are boys, and a lot of them are in the ninth grade or 10th grade. They're getting into high school, reading maybe at a 7th or 8th grade level, and they're already falling behind. And everyone's telling them that we got to get you college ready. I'm like, well, I don't want to go to college. So if this is all about hanging out for 4 years to go to college, why am I hanging out here? And unless they're interested in sports, sometime around their sophomore year, they're at risk of dropping out. But let's reinvent the last 2 years of high school. Totally reinvent the last 2 years. So that if you want to go to university, great. We will have AP classes and we'll get you ready to go to university. If you don't want to go to university but you do want to go to community college, let's make sure that Running Start programs where you can begin getting community college credit in high school are available to kids all across the state. And if you don't want to go to community college or university, that should be okay. Let's have pre-apprenticeship programs in the junior and senior year so that kids graduate not only with a high school diploma, but with a certificate that allows them to go on and get a good family wage job.
Yeah, Port Townsend High School is doing, I guess, not typical things in terms of getting kids involved in what's popular in Port Townsend, which is sailing and woodworking and building ships and things like that. They may not make a career out of it, but just to be exposed to it because it's right here.
I'll tell you that over the next 10 to 15 years, the entire North Pacific fishing fleet is going to need to be rebuilt. It's our grandfather's fishing fleet. It's just getting old. And technology needs to be introduced into a lot of these fishing vessels. The new fishing vessels are not our grandfather's fishing vessel. They cost between $10 and $110 million each.
Oh my gosh.
They're going to be rebuilt over the next 10 years. I want that fleet rebuilt in boatyards in Washington State, in Anacortes, and here in Port Townsend, and maybe down in the harbor. But when I talk to people in the industry, they're saying, well, one of the challenges we would have in rebuilding that fleet here is we don't necessarily have the workforce we need. We don't have people who are trained to go into those boatyards. So if they have a program here in Port Townsend to begin to introduce some of the skills that are going to be needed by boatyards, that's critical, not just for Port Townsend, but for the economy of the entire state.
We are speaking with Bill Bryant, who's trying to become the first Republican to win a Washington governor's race in 36 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, you personally have a background in Port Townsend. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I do. My grandparents were Fred and Gussie Lester, and Grampy ran the Uptown Barbershop in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. For 3 years, he was the chairman of the Rhododendron Festival.
No kidding.
Yeah, so, I came up here. I think that I was in a lot, I don't know if all, but I was in an awful lot of the kids' parades for the Rhody Festival for a number of years, and we would come up and see Grampy and Ma all the time.
Now, I'm looking at a picture here of you as a child, and it says Port Townsend. What was happening at this moment here?
Well, that's 1963, so I'm 3 years old, which means my sister's two, and she's in a little covered wagon we've made out of the wagon, I'm quite sure. And I bet you my grandmother, Ma, did that. And I have a Daniel Boone outfit on, and we were in the Rhododendron Parade.
No kidding. Now, you also, I guess later, when you were not quite this young, you liked to hike in the Olympic Mountains. Can you tell us about that?
I did. I grew up in Hood Sport, which is just down the road a bit. And so I grew up hiking in the Olympics and playing on the beaches of Hood Canal, which is where I get my passion for wanting to save Puget Sound. When I grew up, Puget Sound was a real vibrant ecosystem teeming with life, and today it's threatened. But I was also fortunate that I got to grow up hiking in the Olympics. And that was at a time when there weren't that many people up there. And so I just had a real treasured Huck Finn existence in the 1960s growing up here on the peninsula.
Very cool. We'll switch gears a little bit and back to politics. Where do you stand on the climate change debate?
I think climate change is real, and I think humans are contributing to it. The question is, what do we want to do to either reverse, slow the pace of warming and climate change? At the Port of Seattle, I have taken a number of measures to reduce our carbon footprint at the seaport and the airport, and I think those measures are examples of how we can work with industry to ensure that we are all doing our part. What I will not do, and what Governor Jay Inslee has repeatedly tried to do, is implement policies that will drive jobs out of Washington State and not improve the environment at all. And I am not going to implement policies that allow someone to grab a headline, but at the expense of family wage, middle class jobs.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of wages, we know you're focused on jobs. Where do you stand on the minimum wage debate?
At the Port of Seattle, I voted to increase the minimum wage for workers at SeaTac behind security lines to $11.22, $13.50 including benefits, and slowly going up to $15.50. $11.22 is the wage rate in King County that one needs in order to stay off public assistance. It's called the sustainability wage. And I did not think that anybody who worked 40 hours a week behind security lines should be qualifying for public assistance. My concern is that what makes sense in SeaTac and the wage rate in SeaTac, given the cost of living in King County, might not make sense in Port Townsend or in Ellensburg or in Longview or Republic. And the idea that we're going to set a statewide minimum wage based on the cost of living in Seattle could actually end up hurting some of the people you're trying to help.
That leads perfectly to my next question, which is, what effect, if any, would raising the minimum wage have on jobs and small businesses?
It depends on the community. Mm-hmm. It depends entirely. But there are a lot of small towns around Washington State that would not be able to pay a $15 minimum wage. They just don't make enough money. And they can't jack up their prices in the small town. It wouldn't work. So they'll lay people off, and the owner will work harder. Or when their lease runs out, they might just decide to shut the doors.
What do you say to liberals to convince them that the limited government that you prefer is actually better for all?
What I want to do is ensure that we are delivering services to the people who need them in the most efficient way. And I think too often what we have done, particularly over the last 30 years in Washington State, is take the previous year's budgets and simply add to it. We need to take a pressure hose to Olympia, not for the sake of making government smaller, but for the sake of making it better and more efficient. We need to identify what the objectives of every program is and then determine whether or not it's actually meeting those objectives. And if it's not, let's fix it or eliminate it. Some people say, well, you couldn't eliminate this program, you'll be hurting people. I'm like, if the program isn't delivering services to the people who need it, cutting the program won't hurt them. What will hurt them is perpetuating a program that's not meeting their needs. Let's figure out how we can deliver services in the 21st century, given the technology we have today, in a way that is the most efficient. If that results in smaller government, that's great, but the objective, our goal, is to ensure that we're helping those most in need.
Your father was a teacher. At what level and what subjects did he teach?
He taught in the Hood Canal School District, which is on the Skokomish Reservation, which is where I went to school. And I never had dad as a teacher because he taught middle school, and we moved in the seventh grade, just as I probably would have been taking some of his classes. We moved over into Thurston County, just across the line, so I ended up going to middle school and or finishing middle school and going to high school in Olympia. Dad taught geography and history, and he was also the football and track coach. And then when he moved to Olympia, he actually taught diversified occupations and helped some of the at-risk kids stay in school.
So you're the son of a coach. Were you an athlete? Are you an athlete?
No, am I an athlete? I'm not as athletic as I'd like to be. That's a function of campaigning all the time. I was not. Dad played college football over at Eastern, and I never really had much of even the high school athletic career. But I'm very active in cycling. I still like to hike. I'm an avid fly fisherman. In my 30s and 40s, I did mountain climbing. So I get out as much as I possibly can. I'm still up in the mountains or on the river if I can be.
Tell us about your wife, Barbara.
Barbara actually spent her first 3 years in Nia Bay in the early 1960s. Uh-huh. When it was really at the edge of the world in the 1960s. And then I think when she was three or four, they moved down to Kathlamet near Longview. And she really grew up in the Kathlamet-Longview area. Her dad worked for Crown Zellerbach.
Oh, okay.
So he was up in Nia Bay and then down in Portland, and that's why they were up here and then moved down there. She went to the University of Washington, and I met her on a blind date in 1987, and we were married in 1989. So we've been married, 27 years, I guess?
We're switching gears again, back to politics. You're focused on reducing taxes. Now, how do you propose to do that?
Well, I focused on reducing property taxes at the Port of Seattle. One of the reasons I ran is I was concerned that the port was not being run as fiscally responsibly as I thought it should, and that was undermining its competitiveness because they weren't really taking a hard look at their programs, and as a result, they really weren't setting priorities. And in the absence of setting priorities, I was concerned that we were not going to be spending money in a way that would make us competitive and help keep jobs here in Washington State. So I ran, and the first year we put together a budget that held the property tax flat. And that was the first year that had ever been done in years. Usually the commission had raised the property tax to the maximum legal amount, whether they needed to or not, because they could. And I put together with the staff a proposed budget that held it flat, and we passed that budget. And every year that I was on the commission, we passed a budget that held the property tax flat or cut it in real terms. So that the last budget I voted on collected millions of dollars less than the first budget that I had voted on 8 years before, even though we'd expanded services to the people of King County and Washington State. But again, the objective was not just to go in and cut taxes. The objective was to make the operation efficient and then decide how much you need. Well, I found out that if I made it efficient, I needed less. I didn't go in with the idea we're going to cut them and then figure out what to cut. I said, let's figure out the most efficient way of delivering services, the most efficient way of organizing this operation. And when I did that, I realized, we can do this with fewer funds.
So you're talking about having the government run more efficiently and effectively. Do you specifically see places where there's waste right now that you could
Definitely.
Attack?
On day one, I'm going to announce a zero-based budget initiative, which means we will rebuild the state budget over the course of 4 years from ground zero. We will no longer take the previous year's budgets and simply add to it. And in the course of that exercise, we will look at every department, every agency, every tax incentive, every program. And again, if they're not moving us towards a specific strategic objective, or they're not meeting their own objective, we either fix them or we eliminate them.
You say you once wanted to be an oceanographer. How far did you pursue that, and what drew you in a different direction?
Yeah, I was very fascinated with Puget Sound, and still am. But I would go down to the beach and collect every specimen of whatever lived in Puget Sound. I had formaldehyde jars with all kinds of organisms in them. I had a dog shark still attached to an egg sack, and they were all in my bedroom. And I dried and mounted all the starfish and labeled them with their Latin names. I was really into it. This is a time, when Jacques Cousteau came to Hood Canal in search of the world's largest octopus.
I had heard about that, yes.
And so I was in the middle of all that, and the ITT Rainier was right not too far down in Potlatch, and I'd go down and talk with the scientists, and I was very much into it. Had we continued living in Hoodsport, it's quite possible I would have gone into marine biology. We moved to Olympia, and shortly after that, in high school, I became an exchange student to Brazil and spent a year living in Brazil in 1975-76. And as a result of that experience in Brazil, I came home wanting to go into wanting a career in trade and diplomacy.
So what are Bill Bryant's chances of winning the 2016 race to become governor? Elway polls have him pegged somewhere between 8 and 12 points behind Democrat Jay Inslee, which is within striking distance if he can get out the voters he needs. The huge population center in King County is always critical. Bryant has already won two previous elections in King County for the position of port commissioner. And when he won re-election in 2011, he got 60% of the vote. At the Elks Club Lodge with Bill Bryant, Republican candidate for governor, this is David Cunningham for KPTZ News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by David Cunningham. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m.
exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, I'm David Cunningham.